All right, here we go. Nice, simple topic, as Erica said, relating to the opposite sex, or maybe an interesting topic to get us started across this semester as we think about different kinds of relationships. One of my favourite podcasts is a secular movie podcast called The Big Picture. And just the other week, I was listening to an old episode where they talked a bit about Moana 2. The episode was titled, "What Even Are Movies Anymore?" They didn't like Moana 2. But along the way, the two older Gen Y male hosts, both girl dads, they said, and the younger Gen Z, younger millennial female host, she said, "Is it good that all the new Disney movies don't have romance in them, don't have a love interest? Is that a problem?" And the Gen Y male host said, no, it's good. It's a good reminder that you don't need to define yourself by your romantic relationship. And she was like, yeah, but is it though? Like, she went on to say, to some extent, younger people not dating and not having kids and all that's a social problem we have. And is it helpful that Disney is, training the next generation not to think about romance and stuff? That was an interesting discussion on these themes. I also, a few weeks ago, went to a book launch at the Fuller's Bookshop. Former AFL player has written a novel about an AFL team. The book's called Piss Ants. And in this book event, he was being interviewed by the Tassie novelist Robbie Arnott. And they were talking about a lot of recent media attention, especially in kind of the literary world, about how little dudes read. Maybe a fantasy book or a war book and, you know, biography of a sports player perhaps, but literature. Why aren't men reading literature anymore? And they had a discussion about this. And is it that the literary world has overcorrected to draw in and engage female readers, but you need a different kind of book, different kinds of themes to engage a larger male audience? There's just two examples of wrestling with these questions of the two sexes and how we relate and how we think about them as a culture. But, man, we've been discussing, we could spend ages brainstorming all the sorts of ways, the complexities, the challenges. It's always been a challenge. There's particular 2025 ways that relating to the opposite sex is a tricky topic. I mean, top of the list would be the question of transgender. How do you think about that? Is gender a culturally constructed fluid thing? What's the relationship between that culturally constructed gender and biological sex? And when you answer those questions, what does that mean for identity, well-being, public health, public policy, sports? That's a whole nest of challenging questions. Various feminisms of one kind or another have all sorts of interests and concerns and answers to the nature of what it means to be a woman, what is patriarchy, rights, blame, shame, guilt, the way women are portrayed or idealised in unhelpful ways, questions of opportunity, representation, inclusion, fair work, pay, so-called reproductive rights, aka abortion. There's all those questions. That's a whole other area of relating to the opposite sex. Then there's the biblical and religious questions. What does the Bible say about marriage, divorce, modesty, the roles of men and women in marriage and church leadership? Do religions in general good for men and women or bad for them? Which ones and how? There's reactions to all of these movements. For example, one reaction to feminism has been a subculture of tradwife, a kind of glamorised nostalgia trip around kind of fermenting vegetables and wearing dresses but still being hot. There's very important discussions about domestic abuse, consent, sexual harassment, pornography, the so-called manosphere, male mental health, male suicide, incels. So much, right? It is a complicated topic. We can't mediate all of this stuff. But it's helpful to name that on top of all of this, there's just you. Your mum, your dad, your grand, grandpa, oma, opa, your friends, your school, your experiences, role models. That's part of what you and I bring to this as well, isn't it? So tonight we're going to tackle the topic. I'll do my best, you do your best. Hopefully in the midst of it all, we can extract some basic stuff about what the Bible has to say and mull over together some of what that might mean. If it's true, and we're Christians, we do say, yes, we hold to this. Well, what does it mean about then how we relate to our own sex existence, our own gendered existence, as well as to the opposite sex. So I'm going to begin with just a little foundational observation that is in many ways kind of obvious, but actually strangely seems like a thing you have to make the point of saying to begin with. So as a kind of introductory point, I want to just make the observation that our existence as two sexes, male and female, is tied to our sexually reproductive existence as human creatures. Sexually dimorphic. We have two sexes, male and female, that reproduce, give birth to more humans, male and female. And then a lot of our secondary sex characteristics are connected to that. And even to some degree, social and cultural things are often connected to some extent to the genders, the sexes, are connected to sexual intercourse and reproduction and parenting and nurture. Humans are sexual creatures. Now, that's not saying that in order to be a full man, you have to have had sex and have children, or in order to be a full woman, you have to be a mother. It's not saying that. It's just noting the fact that this aspect of our human existence is one of the fundamental grounds of our existence as two sexes, two genders. Many of the Bible passages, you know, many of any book, pretty much, that you could delve into until somewhat recently, in certain books, when the Bible addresses men and women as these two different sexes, genders, so often it is in the context of marriage, sex, and parenting, having kids. It's an obvious point, but helpful to clarify that. Let's go back to the start of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1. We have this declaration of human beings made in God's image as two sexes. And in that context as well, it is... Well, let's have a look. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Very start of the Bible. God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so they may rule over the fish of the sea, the birds in the air, over the livestock, over all the wild animals, over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. So God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it." The blessing of these, humanity made in the image of God, made male and female, and they reproduce, increase, and fill in number. End of Genesis chapter 2, verses 24, 25. We'll go from verse 23. The man said, "This is now bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. This is why a man leaves his father and mother, is united to his wife. The two become one flesh." So marriage, sex, and then out of that, children, Genesis 1. Arguably, many of the differences between the two sexes are felt most strongly in this context. Yeah, in the context of romance and attraction, sexual intercourse, pregnancy, breastfeeding, parenting in the household. Many of the differences are felt most keenly there. And you could say maybe most not... a lot of what we were saying before, we were going like, yeah, it's a generalisation. You can have smelly girls that don't condition their hair, and you can have guys that pay a lot of careful attention to their fingernails and, you know, love dance. You know, it's not... We say, oh, it's just generalisations. But when it comes to being able to breastfeed a baby, or something, like you're dealing then with something that's no longer generalisations, but absolutes about our creaturely existence. Further away from those things you go, to some extent you could say you feel these issues less keenly. The less you're away from sexual attraction and sex and children, some of these things are felt less pronounced. But of course, you know, our maleness and our femaleness is a part of our existence, our lived experience. It colours things in all sorts of ways, moulds us, even if we have an atypical or complicated relationship to our gender. It still is, we're still being a man with an atypical, complicated relationship to our maleness, or a female with a complicated relationship to our femaleness. It's a bizarre blind spot in the otherwise fabulous, hilarious, and intelligent film Barbie, that has so much to say about identity and destiny and the two sexes and all sorts of things, has very little helpful, especially positive, to say about having kids and falling in love. It kind of fumbled that one, you know, in the scheme of things. Even if we don't agree on all the details of nature, nurture, culture, essence, all the specifics of what's a dude and what's a chick and what's masculine, what's feminine, what should be, what's all that stuff. I would hope we can start with agreeing on this grounded biological sexed nature, or at least the Bible puts that forward as a fundamental of human existence. Whatever very minor, extremely rare exceptions to that sexual dimorphism are, the vast majority of human experience is this two biological sexes. Even if you can't be too prescriptive about a bunch of things, you can't get away from the fact that we exist as men and women. We have a sense of a masculine and a feminine existence that shapes our experience. But the Bible goes a little further than that. It actually uses this gendered nature of humanity to reflect something of spiritual reality. The Bible uses metaphors of men and women, mothers and fathers, quite often. Genesis chapter 1 that we just read, it describes the image of God, and then in that context talks about maleness and femaleness, the differentness and the unity of humanity. Now, could that be that there is something in the differentness and oneness of the human race that reflects something of God's image? Much clearer is Genesis chapter 5 at the very end, which does talk about the unity in marriage as being a picture of Christ and the church, of God's saving purposes. Genesis 5 verse 31 and 32. Ephesians chapter 5 verse 31, I beg your pardon. It quotes from Genesis in Ephesians 5 verse 31. Quotes from Genesis 2, where Genesis says, this reason, man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, the two will become one flesh. Ephesians 5:31. And then verse 32 says, this is a profound mystery. Strap yourself in. I'm talking about Christ and the church. That in the union as one flesh of man and woman, there is then an image, a picture, an anticipation of the union of Christ with his church, the new humanity. We reflect God's saving purposes in our maleness and femaleness together in marriage. We reflect perhaps something of God's nature and God's image in just our differentness but oneness as a human race, male and female. There's a foundational kind of couple of principles to start off with, get us thinking. That's some of where the Bible begins. What does it mean then for how we relate to each other? That's the topic for tonight. The relating to the other sex. If that's the case, if we are these two sexes, that a very significant foundational part of that is connected with love, sex, romance, kids and family, that's one of the marked differences between us. But if there is also this glorious opportunity for us to reflect God's image and God's saving purposes in our differentness but oneness, what does that mean? I've got five what that means things, five headings, which will be the bulk of our time together. And then we'll have a bit of a chance for questions if you want to dare to ask any. First, we'll look at, and I'm going to encourage you to delight in the difference between the sexes. Delight in the difference. Secondly, don't judge or boast. Don't boast in your own sex. Don't judge the other. Third, move past it. Don't get stuck on making everything about, you know, gender and sex and whatever. Fourth, treat people well in romance. And fifth, use the differences for good. Delight in difference, don't judge or boast, move past it, treat people well in romance, and use differences for good. All right, delight in differences. It's a good thing, part of God's good creation. God said it was very good once he'd finished his creation, including the creation of men and women. He rested on the seventh day, blessed it. It's part of God's creation that humanity are created, male and female. Reflects his image together, the sexes in marriage, reflect something of the gospel. We are created as two sexes to rule the world, to bring God's blessing to the world, to tend and care for the garden, to be not alone together, men and women, to be united as one flesh in marriage. It's a good thing. And I think when we feel complicated and twisted and confused about it, we can lose sight of the fact that actually, however complicated it can be, there's something good there that we can go, like, that rocks. Like, being men and women rocks. It's great that there are men in the world. It's great there are women in the world. Yay! Thanks, God. Delight in your own gendered existence, men and women here. Delight in your own existence, your maleness, your femaleness. God made it, said it was good. It's a good thing. It's good that you're a man. That's good. It's good that you're a woman. That's good. even if you're not a normal or stereotypical manly man or girly girl, whatever that's meant to mean. Even if you don't meet some standard or ideal or have the right set of looks, skills or interests, it's good that you're a man. God made you, you're precious to him, you're good. It's good that you're a woman. God made you, you're precious, it's good. And even if you have a complicated relationship to your biology, your body, your sex, your doesn't make it bad. Yeah? Doesn't make you not a male or not a female if you're just a different kind of man, a different kind of woman. Yeah? It's good. Delight in the two sexes, in yours and in the other. It's good there are men and women. It's good that we're different from one another. Even the areas of some kinds of generalized differences between, we can rejoice in that. Like Adam, when he sees Eve in the Garden of Eden, this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. Like we're humans together. It's a good blessing. It's a great thing. Bursts into song. There's a lot of complicated interpretation work to be done in 1 Corinthians 11, but I just want to highlight a couple of very simple things it says that are worth of note. The first is, notice the celebrating of glory in the two sexes. 1 Corinthians 11, you can flip there if you want, or I'll just read it to you. Again, we won't delve into the complexities or anything, but just notice the fact that we get told here that man is the image and glory of God, verse 7. And then also in verse 7, woman is the glory of man. Now, you might take exception at the language, but the glory is the thing I want to highlight there, that he's saying that men and women both are glorious. And a little further on in verse 11 and 12, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, nor is man independent of woman, for as woman came from man, so man is born of woman, and everything comes from God. It's glorious, it's wonderful, it's interdependent, it's good. So rather than a posture of, well, we're about to get to it, boasting, judging, disdain, what about admiration of each sex, of one another, of the other? What about curiosity, where there's differences, or why on earth do they do that, that way? Why do they? Affection, rejoicing, honouring, giving dignity to one another in our differentnesses across the two genders. Delight. Secondly, don't boast or judge. There are awful sexisms of all kinds, and always have been as long as humans have been sinful, to disdain, mock, belittle, sideline. I mean, it's not just between the two genders. Any difference human beings can find an excuse to divide. But this is a big one, isn't it? The whole sexist masculinity that in various ways throughout history have cast women at times, at often, as less than, in some sense, even less than fully human, or as an object or property, as kind of quasi-children in some way or another. It can be so easy for men to dismiss the thoughts, concerns, intelligence, morality, strength, experience of women. That's just not that relevant, significant, important, valuable, to exclude entirely from any opportunity to access influence or information, let alone power. To talk about women in degrading ways, make female things terms of insult or objects of disgust. To just caricature women as the dangerous temptress or the idolised, you know, virgin or mother or lover, instead of just humans like you. To shut down any unusual woman as bossy or mannish or whatever you like. A witch, probably. Kind of maleness that at various times throughout history and even today, even amongst Tasmanians, that can boast in maleness as what's ultimately the best, the pinnacle, the right, the smart, the strong, the important, the valuable. It's possible to buy into this as a woman too, to kind of internalise this kind of sexism, internalise misogyny, and kind of go, I don't like being a woman. Wish I wasn't. Wish I didn't have to be. Or to despise certain aspects of womanhood, to despise mothers can be a common one, even amongst women to other women. So there's a whole area of yuck sexism that is not biblical, And the Bible charts various manifestations of it and shows it, displays it, condemns it across its pages. But there's also sexist kinds of feminism too, you know. I mean, I know you know. There's lots of good that comes from feminisms in various times. Yes, lots. But without a doubt, there are versions of it that just are a kind of sexism. Now, I realise that today there's a certain kind of obtuse logic that says, I'm a champion of equality, I'm an opponent of discrimination, except when we're talking about someone with privilege. They're open game. Everyone else, we must seek equality and respect and speak about with great sensitivity, but if someone can be cast in some way as being at a point of privilege, well then all the same things I spoke about with male sexism come into play. Disdain, mockery, belittling, excluding, sidelining. In many cultures in history, men have been cast as more moral than women. In a big chunk of Western society now, women are being cast as it's just assumed a given. Women are more moral than men. So, you know, these things go around and come around in various ways. Men's thoughts, perspectives, experiences, concerns can be dismissed. The same kind of woman who might complain about mansplaining then presumes to tell men what they're really experiencing and why they're experiencing and what they ought to do about it, with no sense of the hypocrisy involved. Men can be spoken about in sneering and degrading ways, pale, male and stale, dude, tech, bros, chads and brads, and so on. Men talk about any problem they have and the reply is, oh, boo-hoo, cry me a wither, river, you've had power long enough, serves you right, sucked in. That kind of stuff. I mean, you know, it doesn't take long, right? If your phone has been listening to everything we're saying, as our phones seem to always be doing it, you'll probably get fed some of this stuff, I guess, afterwards, won't you, in your algorithm. Male traits, the stereotypical ones, can be caricatured as pathological and toxic. Like just guys might not cry as much. And rather than that being an okay difference that can be celebrated, it gets called like a toxic pathological problem and you're probably going to become a murderer or a rapist because you don't cry enough. That can be one version of this sorts of stuff that can happen. And then men can internalise it, either in hating themselves or in going after some other guys. The way guys can often deal with difficult emotions, don't name them, don't deal with them, and instead externalise them on someone else. And so we get this male-to-male sexism, finding someone else smaller and weaker than us that we call the beta, the cuck, the pansy, the whatever. Don't judge. Don't boast. Delight in one another. Show humility, show curiosity, show interest, seek understanding before presuming to know and to judge, and then together seek to rebuke and learn and correct and move forward. Delight in each sex. It's a beautiful part of God's creation. Beware of being too quick to judge and boast. Thirdly, move past the whole discourse entirely. That's why I chose Romans 16 as the reading. Don't make everything in life about sex and gender. There are some gendered elements in Romans 16, like verse 13. It's a lovely verse. Rufus's mum was a mum to Paul. I love it. that's a beautiful little touch there. And verse 20 alludes to the judgment on the serpent, Genesis 3:15, in a gendered discourse in the curse section of Genesis. And the church as a whole is the offspring of the woman who'll crush Satan's head, which is cool. So there's a few little gendered elements, but what's amazing about the whole chapter with so many names of people, men and women, is it's gender secondary. It's not gender blind. It uses words like mother and sister and brother and so on, but what are they? They're fellow workers. They're brothers and sisters. They're fellow Jews. They're missionaries and deacons and house church leaders and patrons. They're both gender, and interestingly, like historians will note the names here that indicate different slave and master statuses socioeconomically based on the different names. So both gender and socioeconomic class are secondary because not everything is about gender and sex. sexual desire, sexual politics, feminism, patriarchy, red pills and black pills and whatever colour pill you like. Not everything is about gender roles and norms. There's more to life and faith and ministry and human existence than biological sex and sociological gender. It's kind of a relief, hey? Sometimes you can just be a person, a Christian, a worker, a student, a tennis player, a rollerblader, or whatever it is. There is some useful analytical power to the concept of patriarchy, but for some, the word is just used as an explain-all. And as soon as the reason is given, oh, it's because of the patriarchy, it's just not the truth. That's kind of conspiracy theory level thinking, ideology, when it's instantly explained that way. Same goes in the manosphere. Everything is the longhouse, and women who are out to get us and undermine us and whatever. It's conspiracy theory, explain all thinking. Sometimes it's not the patriarchy. Sometimes it's not the longhouse. Sometimes it's not class and capitalism. Sometimes it's just people being people, bad luck, other things, yeah? There's other factors, Freudian desires, and sinful lust in Christian culture. Sometimes that's not the main thing you need to be thinking about. If you're an earnest Christian man wanting to be godly, sometimes the primary relationship you should have with a nice Christian woman in your life is not, she will potentially tempt me to sin. She could just be a sister in Christ. So sometimes it's not about sex and gender. There's more to life on it. So get on. Get on with work. Get on with ministry. Get on with gaming. Get on with art and gardening. And with friends, colleagues, teammates, family members, fellow Christians and so on. Christianity does an interesting thing, always has. Even though there are baby questions about why is God father and son, not mother and daughter, you know, what's the deal with, you know, men's ordination, women's ordination, you know, even though there are some questions there, Christianity is not a religion where it's all about the gods having sex. And you go to the temple and there's temple prostitutes and you worship God through orgies, and it's not actually a sex-first religion. And through history, it's had a tendency to domesticate men, pull them out of just being man, dude, bloke, conqueror, ravisher, to actually pull them also into home life, make them more feminine. It praises male virginity, you know, which is in patriarchal cultures not really the issue. You know, it does a weird thing to men, domesticates them, and it elevates women, values their agency. I mean, get a load of Phoebe. I mean, there's a great bunch of names in this chapter. If you're hoping to have kids one day, go for some of these, right? Phlegon, Petrobus, Tryphena, Trophos. But Phoebe, what a weapon she is. She's been a help to all sorts of people, including Paul, Rufus's mum, we've already talked about, Priscilla and Aquila. Get a load of them. Wherever they go, they seem to be starting a church in the house. And on we could go. It elevates women, values their agency and their life apart from just getting married and having kids. Can't ignore sex differences. It's foolish to attempt to be gender blind, just like it's foolish to attempt to be race blind or something, colour blind. But don't fixate on them. Delight, don't judge and boast. Move on. Fourth, treat others well in romance. We are two sexes. And a significant fundamental reason for that, as I began with, is to marry and have kids together. God made them one flesh, Malachi 2 verse 15 says, and why? So that they'll be godly offspring. That's really good. Dating, getting married, having sex, having kids, raising kids are really, really good things. They're really good parts of being humans, serving God, living in the world. And it's most people historically have, vast majority of people historically have, most people still today still do. You know, especially when you include de facto relationships. Having kids is really good. It's literally natural. But it's also in the sense of God's intention for nature. The Bible says it's a good thing that God wants for people to do, to have kids. Romance, sex, marriage, kids, they all go together. It's this good package deal that God has made us two sexes. One of the big reasons for it is that most people, although not all, you don't have to, but most people will pair up and have kids, and that's a good thing. Good part of being human. It's a really good thing. It's family units, and personal belonging and care that are also economic units and political units. Society is built up of households, not built up by politicians and the media, it's built up by just ordinary everyday households, and most of them are family related, biologically connected. Not all, don't have to, but it's a really big, good part of being humans. At the centre of that is that this sex difference that then enjoys a union in romance, sex, love, romance and kids all go together as a package deal, that exclusive, consenting, lifelong sexual relationship between one man and one woman, that marriage, that's the place where sex lives, thrives, and we treat each other well, kids well, and set up societies in a stable way. It's a good thing. It's a good kind of ambition to have. To, you know, it's not, I guess that was the millennial woman podcaster's concern, is the risk can be, you can be so correcting against making it the necessary rule that you have to want to get married. Every woman has to, and that's the most important thing about being a woman. You can so overcorrect that you miss the fact that it's a really good thing to want to get married and have a family. It's a good ambition to have. It's a great thing to have kids. It's a good thing to do. It's a good deed. And it's something that takes a lot of work, time and effort, money, so you plan for it. You know, you aim for it. It's a big part of life, most people's life to some extent. It affects us. You factor that into it, your relationships. And so you factor that into to some extent. So here's an interesting thought as we think about them treating each other well in the light of that. To some extent, a lot of our relationships with the opposite sex, it's possible that a lot of them are, in some level, potential partners. So that's just a dimension of our relationships, guys and girls together, that in addition to being workmates or friends, shouldn't always be the big factor you think about all the time. But it's a thing that's there, right? And so, especially in intimacy, affection, desire, even to temptation, just gotta not be naive about it. Feelings can get hurt. Things can end up in places you don't want them to end up in if you're not sensitive to the fact that part of the difference between the sexes also includes the attraction between the sexes. So I might be thinking we're just mates. They might be hoping, thinking, wondering something more. We might both be saying we're just mates, but we might find ourselves feeling being something more. We've got to be not naive about it, sensitive to it, even possibly careful about it, about the potential for that desire, intimacy, and especially if you're already committed to someone else, you know, betrayal that can come when strong feelings come up, sexual attraction comes up. Something to be aware of, can't pretend, shouldn't pretend. It's not there. Life's not all about sex and romance. But it's also almost never entirely not something in our lived experience. What about if you want to find a partner and don't have one then? How do I treat others well in that process? Well, some pretty obvious things, I think. More or less the things that are good for anything anyway, right? Work on yourself. Be proactive. Be godly. Work on yourself. If I want to meet a partner, just like if I want to get a job or anything else, really, work on your character. Work on having good personal relationships. Broaden your personal relationships and networks. Grow as a person. It's going to be more appealing to consider a relationship with another person who has interests, looks after their health, has some kind of plan for the future. So what's your plan for the future? Just want to find a girl. What else? Just that. Just on Reddit a lot, you know. Just kind of, that's it. Whereas if you say, well, look, I'm working on this in terms of career, I'm working on this in terms of my well-being, I'm even getting in touch with my feelings, growing as in my faith and godliness, and so on. Have some hobbies. Yeah. Be proactive. Anything pretty much in life. You're going to have to take some steps, and they involve risks, at least the risk of failure and disappointment. Or not being good at it at first. Possibly the risk of something worse, embarrassment or hurt, disappointment. So take some risks. that risk might be the pretty safe risk of asking, like, a friend or family member, do you know anyone? You know, like, I'm trying to find a, you know, a girlfriend or a partner or something. Do you know anyone you could introduce me to? That might feel safer to you. You might do it through a dating app. That might feel safer still, because you don't have to talk to a person. You could postpone that a little longer until you find a potential person and you know they're already looking for someone too. Maybe that's the way you want to go. Maybe there is a somebody, and there's a somebody in your circles, and then the risk is you're going to have to say sooner or later, hey, you know, would you like to? And then do an ask of exploring a possible relationship with them. So be proactive. It's worth it, though. Like, it is worth taking risks for things. Like, do you want to be safe and not awkward and not cringe and not fail and not be embarrassed and not be hurt and just be not? Just, like, have, like, a really good high score in a game and, you know heaps about, like, ancient Vikings? Or do you want to also have taken some risk and, yeah, maybe had been a bit embarrassed, been a bit awkward, been a bit cringe, had your heart broken, but who knows, maybe the second time around you meet special guy, meet special girl, and you're away. And then just be godly, be honest in romance, be clear, be kind, be respectful. Listen to friends, others. Invite them to point out if you're being too much, too extra, too pushy. Don't harass, hover, be pushy. Don't take no for an answer. Don't not take no for an answer. You know, any kind of influencer who tells you, girls love it when you just hassle them out heaps. Yeah, nah. don't give clear and kind no's to people. Don't lead someone on because you're far too nice to be honest to somebody. You'd much rather be nice and kind of lie to them and mislead them. Yeah, like, you've got to be brave to say, I'm sorry, I don't think about you that way or something. Nice, clear nose, don't ghost people, don't be generous, interested, listen, share. Actually, these godly characteristics are also very attractive ones in terms of a relationship with somebody else. Yeah? Where'd you find this person? Like, what, they listen? They ask questions? They share about themselves? Tell me more. If you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, a romantic relationship, look, as you come into adulthood, increasingly, you need to recognise that also your romantic relationships have an adult dimension to them. It's not hanging out by the monkey bars at school anymore. It's marriage and kids and stuff is at least in the conversation eventually. And it's worth keeping that in mind. Yeah. Marriage, sex, kids, attraction, romance all go together. Definitely a romantic relationship is not the time for sexual arousal and sex now. No, marriage, sex, kids, romance, they all go together in the context of marriage. But in a sense, sooner or later, I need to be asking the question, are we going to get married? And if not, then sooner or later, I need to not lead that other person on. Don't put it off forever either. It's okay to get married young and poor. It's okay to have a simple wedding and honeymoon. It's okay not to have a house yet. And also, as you think this way, that does change the way you think about possible partners. If in the end you want to be serious with another person and your life together, then suddenly you need to start asking, hang on, like, they may be hot, they may be fun, but are they really a good husband or wife? Are they a really good dad or mum? That's suddenly a different kind of question. And you start going, if your answer is, it'll be fine, I'll change him. Yeah. No. No, you want to find someone who's already got going, working on that stuff, going in that direction. Yeah. You're a Christian. I'm a date and marry a Christian. So, like, find someone who can be Christians. They're the most important adventure in your life, sharing a God story. Bring your romance into that. Marriage is a serious and deep thing. It's a huge commitment. Huge commitment, man. I mean, people and ah forever about buying a secondhand car, about buying a house, and yet they kind of do this sort of on a whim, follow their heart, not inviting the input of others in. It's mental. It's like one of the biggest decisions you'll make. Invite your church, your family, your friends into the conversation in some way or another. those old-fashioned ways of that all happening, asking for the daughter's hand in marriage and whatever else. But however you do it, even if it's more low-key, you want to invite others into your life, because you know what a red flag is for abuse? A partner who takes you away from your friends and your family. And that's trouble. Just us. No one else understands you the way I understand you, and no one else understands me the way I understand me, and I actually feel like they don't like me, and let's just be us. We need to... That's red flag stuff. You want to actually invite the community. Marriage is, to some extent, a social part. Our social lives together as communities. So invite your communities into it. Last of all, use the differences for good. It's true in dating, marriage, family, friendship, work, sport, church. use the differences for good. Ultimately, there's only one moral life that we all live. Worship God, love other people. That's what Jesus says, two great commandments, Matthew 22. One moral life. Don't be selfish. Don't be idolatrous. Worship God, love people. But all our lives are different in all sorts of ways. Our lot in life, our strengths and weaknesses, our struggles and disabilities, including then also our biological sex. It changes the way we live life, experience it. And so I'm going to touch on a couple of things here about general differences. But the thing is, in the end, all these kinds of exhortations are true for both. Dudes, get in touch with your feelings. It's not like it's not good for women to get in touch with their feelings. Like, girls, get in touch with your feelings. Like, it's, do you know what I mean? Like, man, step up, stop being passive, and, you know, do something with your life. Well, women, step up and stop being passive, do something with you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, any sexed exhortation, gendered exhortation, you can flip it. You know, invest in your families, women, and be good in the home. Well, invest in your families, men. As the Godfather said, a man who doesn't spend time with his family can never be a real man. but every culture, including the Bible's culture and texts, we can't help but moralise along gendered lines, because there are some general experiences that reflect. Have a bunch of food, we're going to have some toasties later. Generally, when you do that, dudes won't have a problem in sort of going straight in like seagulls. So it's just yet another case of the kind of, like, the old-fashioned version is open the door for the lady. The new version is, guys, don't manspread when you're on public transport. Don't mansplain, don't interrupt. It's versions of guys can be low in social consciousness and quick to just get food. Say what they already know. They don't care if other people already know it too. They just like saying the thing they know. So there are the general things, you know, our culture. You know, men, don't mansplain, don't manspread. Male violence is an issue. Women, be strong. Don't define yourself by nothing more than romance and kids. Learn to not say sorry when you don't need to say sorry. You know, every culture has these things. Let me hit on a couple then. I'll start with women, if you forgive me. To the degree there is a difference in relational skill, in verbal and emotional articulacy, in empathy and nurture, in collaborative capacity, it doesn't matter if you agree or whatever. To some extent, that's true of everybody. But to the degree to which women have a particular kind of power with physical beauty, use those things for good. Support, collaboration, comfort, counsel, empathizing, advocacy, building, those are all great things. If those differences are strengths you share, women, use them for good. They're great things to give to the world. Glorious things, delight in them. Beauty in the context of sex and romance and marriage can be delighted in a very wonderful, glorious way, but in more modest and appropriate ways, it also adds something to our life together in God's beautiful creation. Use them for good. Beware using, if it's true, there is more verbal skill and emotional acuity. Beware of those manipulative and cutting remarks. Subtle social passive-aggressive power games, gossip, emotional cruelty. Beware of a kind of, again, to the degree this is true of all of us, there is a kind of unhinged empathy or emotionalism that loses room for sort of a grounding in sort of reason and principle and justice, or a kind of nurturing that stunts growth and doesn't expect others to take responsibility for themselves. Sex appeal can be used to control and manipulate. To the degree any of that maps, use the differences for good. Build community, support great causes, seek the good of others and the glory of God, women. Men, to the degree that this is true, assertiveness, drive, task, focus, ambition, physical and economic strength, emotional reserve, in some emotions. Use those things to build, to explore, to pioneer, to protect, to innovate, to sacrifice for the good of other people. There was a TED talk about a polar explorer who said, I've sacrificed my friends, my relationships, my health, just to drag heavy things around cold places. Well done, guy. There's a place for explorers, sure. But on another level, you want to go, it's a pretty small place. Like, thanks, but, you know. Yes, there's a certain emotional reserve that in general men have a capacity for, but other emotions, anger and lust, as well as those subterranean, unnamed emotions, sadness and insecurity, turn sour and harsh, even violent. So watch out for that. Lust as a desire, including in that pit of porn. And it feels weird to say any porn is worse than any other porn, but man, violent porn? Get out of that. I mean, that is a tangle of some of the worst of multiple worsts of male existence. The male assertiveness turned to violence and the male sexual desire turned to lust. You gotta untrain your brain from that stuff, your heart from that stuff, your fantasy from that stuff. Get out of there. Going back to the delighting in your brother, in your sisters as humans in God's image. Dwell on that. Personify women, don't objectify them, let alone sadistically objectify them. Beware of social and economic and physical strength being used to exclude and control, to wound. Don't push, hit, or shout at a woman or anyone weaker than you. Don't use your strength or privilege for selfishness, but service. Men, serve. Sacrificially, gently serve. And learn to say you're sorry. Learn to say you're sad or scared or angry or tired or hungry. Men and women, all of us, let's live lives of love and worship. To the extent we're different, let's use the differences for good. To the extent we're the same, let's just be good and ask God for forgiveness when we're not. For the good of humanity, for the glory of God, let's work together in our maleness, in our femaleness, in our humanness, in our sinfulness and need for forgiveness, in our relieved salvation, lifted up by God's grace and called to something wonderful to come. Let's live lives that way, shall we? I'll pray. Heavenly Father, we ask that you help us sift through these things, land on what's true or good, especially attend to the good things we need to really think on those things, as well as the issues that we need to address and turn away from and turn to a different, better way with your power. Help us know you, know the world you've made, including us, ourselves and others that you've also made. And we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.